Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
There are a number of polls out there, including a CBS News Battleground Tracker poll, that show Joe Biden is either tied or leading the president in some key swing states. But there is one leading forecaster out there that, you know, has a very impressive track record, and he's suggesting that maybe the polls aren't where you want to look. Maybe there are different metrics when you want to make an accurate prediction. Professor Alan Lichtman has studied presidential elections for decades and has been right in every presidential election since 1984, including Mr. Trump's ultimate victory in 2016. He has done so by building a system consisting of 13 questions, and he's already made his prediction for 2020. And Professor Lichtman is joining us now. Professor, you are a professor of history at American University. Really, really glad you are joining us. What I love about your 13 questions is they're really simple and accessible. And as I was watching, because you did this really, really great video, I was, you know, it was almost like a game trying to predict what your answer was going to be, true or false, because your 13 questions have it's either true or false, and then you check mark on one side or the other. And if it comes out to be six falses or six truths, then that determines, you know, which way you predict the election's going to go. But hey, listen, there's a whole industry of pollsters out there, right? They call people up, they ask questions, they crunch the numbers. So before we get into your system, I want to ask you, you know, what's your take on polling? I mean, are we misguided by looking at these polls?
You know, the pollsters are great people. They're friends of mine. They do their job well. The problem is polls are not predictors. I will repeat that. Polls are not predictors. They are snapshots at a given point in time, and that snapshot could change overnight. So it's not tethered to any reality. How do you know whether the situation has changed? You take another poll, and so on and so on. The other problem with the polls, of course, is likely voters. They don't know who's actually going to vote, so they have to estimate who likely voters are. So when they tell you the error margin is plus and minus 3 or 4%, that's statistical error. That doesn't take into account the error from estimating likely voters. Why are we so obsessed with polls? Again, journalists are great friends of mine, but it's the lazy person's way of doing journalism. You don't have to get out of bed in the morning to write a story about the polls. All you have to do is read it. And here's what's happened in America. You know, Dwight Eisenhower in 1961 warned about the military-industrial complex. Well, we have the political-industrial complex in America. We have the pollsters, the consultants, and the handlers who make huge amounts of money from doing what they do. Then we have the media who has to cover the election every single day. What's better than the polls for tracking that? And then, of course, we have the candidates who think falsely that they benefit by following all of this. Very hard iron triangle to crack.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, you can't deny your track record, and you were amongst the few who had predicted that President Trump was going to win the 2016 election in defiance of the polls. So let us talk about your system. How did it come to be? What makes these 13 questions such powerful predictors?
The reason they work is that they reflect how American presidential elections really work. And that is, American presidential elections are essentially votes up or down on the strength and performance of the party holding the White House. All of the wind of the campaigns don't matter, not the speeches, the debates, the ads, the tricks of the campaign. Voters are pragmatic, and they decide whether the performance is good enough to give the party holding the White House another 4 years. Guess what? Amazingly, it's governing, not campaigning, that counts. And the keys gauge the big picture of incumbent performance and strength, looking at things like parties, midterm elections, long and short-term economy, social unrest, scandal, foreign policy successes and failures, policy change. And only two of the keys have anything to do with the candidates. And they ask the very high threshold question whether the challenger or the incumbent is that once in a generation Barack Obama, Ronald Reagan charismatic candidate. And the way it works, if six or more of these true false questions are false, that's a negative against the party in power, and they lose. Six strikes and you're out.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that the only questions that pertain to the candidates or the incumbent had to do with charisma, because I thought, geez, it's the one thing that's sort of subjective. You know, does the guy make you feel good? Does he inspire you? And certainly when you look at somebody like Donald Trump, boy, you know, depending on who you ask, you can get radically different questions. But I suppose charisma, whether the person is turning you off or engaging, is, you know, even if they're turning you off, I guess there's something powerful about that personality.
Yeah, it's much less subjective than you would think. Because, as I said, this is very special. You're talking about the once in a generation. And here's why I count that key against Donald Trump. Yes, he is a great showman. But to meet the criteria of that key, when you buy my book, Predicting the Next President, I have a detailed explanation of how to turn the key. You have to be broadly appealing. And we know Donald Trump appeals only to a narrow slice of the electorate. Maybe 40, 42% approve of him, but only 25% strongly approve. That's not enough to win that team.
Okay, so your prediction for 2020 is?
Seven negative keys against the incumbent Republicans, Donald Trump. Donald Trump is predicted to lose the presidential election. At one time, I used to predict the popular vote, but that's useless now, because the Democrats pick up automatically 5 to 6 million extra votes in two states alone, New York and California. So Democrats will win any close election. The baseline has shifted. So as in 2016, I now only predict the winner.
All right. So then let me ask you this question about 2020, because it's been such a wacky year. And as I was sort of going through your questions, I thought so much of what has happened has really only that you know, could determine whether a question would be answered false or true has happened only in the last 6 months, really since January. You know, the coronavirus, the protests that we've been seeing in the streets, though we did see, you know, many protests at the beginning of the president's term. I thought to myself, I wonder how these questions would be answered even a mere 8 months ago, if the conclusion would have been different just 8 months ago.
Absolutely, yes. Donald Trump was cruising the election in 2019. He only had four negative keys against him. But then he made a fundamental mistake. You know, right here in my study on my wall, I have a letter on the Washington Post where I predicted his win, which says, Professor, congrats, good call. And then in big Sharpie letters, the personal signature of Donald J. Trump. But he didn't understand the real meaning of the keys, which is it's governing, not campaigning, that counts. And when he was confronted with these new crises in 2020, he made a huge mistake both for the nation and himself. Instead of trying to solve racial injustice, trying to deal with the pandemic, he thought he could talk his way out of it. And the result are the failures that sunk his reelection chances. Never in the history of the presidency has there been such a quick reversal of fortune. Donald Trump's failures to deal with our crises turned three more keys against him for a total of seven. The short-term economy, because we plunged into recession. The long-term economy, because this relentlessly negative growth has driven his long-term growth below that of the Obama years. And, of course, the widespread social unrest. So you're absolutely right. We've had an historically unprecedented reversal of fortune here. But the president has no one to blame but himself.
All right, and very quickly, because I know you have to leave, what if something happens in the next few months? Could we see your prediction turn again? Because 2020 has been perhaps one of the wackiest years that many of us have ever lived. What if something changes before November?
Well, the keys of the big picture, they don't change easily. The economy is not suddenly going to soar in a month or two. Social unrest is not going to suddenly end. But there are two things that are outside the purview of the keys or any prediction system that keep me awake at night. One, you talked about very eloquently in your previous segment, and you're right, that reporter was extraordinary. Voter suppression. Donald Trump and his enablers are working as hard as possible to suppress the vote. Look, we know they depend on people like me, old white men. That's the most shrinking part of the electorate. They can't create more old white men, but they can try to keep down the votes of the Democratic base, which is rising, of minorities and young people. Second thing that keeps me awake at night is Russian interference. We know the Russians are coming back, and we know Donald Trump, again, is going to welcome and exploit.
Professor, fascinating talking to you, Professor Lichtman. I urge people to Google his name and look up those questions and see what you think for yourself. Thank you so much.
And Marie, let me make one more point. It is the world's only do-it-yourself prediction system. You're right. Anyone can answer my questions and become a forecaster.
I love it. I posted it on my social media platforms because I think this is going to keep people engaged and spark some really good conversations, and that's what we need to do, talk more about this sort of stuff. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
The hardest thing about being a forecaster, it's not knowing history, although you got no history. It's not knowing politics, so you got no politics. It's not knowing math, although you got no math. It's putting aside your own political preferences.
You're obviously a Democrat. You said Trump would win in 2016 when people thought you were crazy for choosing Trump.
I was extremely unpopular. I did get a note and it said, Professor, congrats, good call, Donald J. Trump. You want to see it?
You got it. Let me see it.
There it is.
So let's talk about the 13th.
It's what we call a very robust model that's lasted through enormous change. The Civil War, the Great Depression, World War II. We just looked at patterns.
It's brilliant when you think about it.
Judgments here have to be objective and nonpartisan. All I need to do is say true or false. So if it's false, that's one key against them.
The party mandate, which side do you choose with that? No primary contest. Incumbency, third parties, short-term economy, long-term economy. 7 is policy change, social unrest, scandal, number 9. Foreign military failure. Challenger's charisma, which is Biden. Incumbent charisma.
That one I count as false.
You gotta have charisma for advertisers to say,
your track record of predicting elections? Come on. The most important thing you have as president is your credibility, and the rest is history.
So my guest today is a historian, and on top of that, he got his PhD from Harvard and wrote a couple books. He's read many of them, but he wrote a couple books. One was called The Keys to the White House, and the other one recently, the title is The Case for Impeachment. In his book, he met a Russian man, which I'll let him tell you the whole story, that helped him come out with a model based on 3 indicators to determine who can win the White House. And since 1984, every single time he's got it right. And it's not one-sided. It was 5 Republicans, 4 Democrats. Even though he's a Democrat, he'll tell you up front, he still chose 5 Republicans and 4 Democrats. So he's on a 9-game winning streak. And with that being said, my guest today, Alan Lichtman. Alan, thank you so much for being a guest on Valuetainment.
My great pleasure.
So, Alan, how do you and this friend of yours that you met, tell us that story. How did this happen to come up with these 13 indicators?
Yeah, I'd love to tell you I came up with them with my brilliant thinking. But if I were to tell you that, to quote the late, not so great Richard Nixon, that would be wrong. In 1981, I was a distinguished visiting scholar at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. Right. And there I met the Russian, Vladimir Kailas Borok, the world's leading authority on earthquake prediction, the head of the Institute of Pattern Recognition and Earthquake Prediction in Moscow. And he suggested we collaborate. And being foresightful, of course, I said, we're not going to collaborate. Earthquakes may be a big deal here in Washington, D.C., but I have to go back, in Southern California, but I have to go back to Washington, D.C. Nobody cares about earthquakes there.
That's right.
You know, I teach at American University. And he said, I don't want to do earthquakes. I already solved that. Yeah, right. Get this. He said in 1963, under President John F. Kennedy, He was part of the Soviet scientific delegation that negotiated the most important treaty in the history of the world,
wow,
by far, the nuclear test ban treaty, mm-hmm, that stopped us from poisoning the atmosphere, the oceans, and the earth. And he said, I fell in love with politics, and I always wanted to use the methods of earthquake prediction to predict elections. But he said, look, I live in the Soviet Union. Elections? Forget it. It's supreme leader or off with your head. But you know all about elections. So we became the odd couple of political research. And I can tell you what happened after that if you want to know.
I want to know about it. Tell me.
Okay. So our key insight was to reconceptualize presidential elections in earthquake geophysical terms. Remember, this is 1981, not as Carter versus Reagan, not as Republican versus Democrat, not as liberal versus conservative, but as stability, the party in power keeps the White House, and earthquake, the party in power is turned out. So the second big insight was we were going to base our model on the idea that American presidential elections are essentially votes up or down on the strength and performance of the party holding the White House. Should we give them four more years? And mm-hmm, so based on those two ideas, we looked at every American presidential election from 1860, the horse and buggy days of politics, when Abraham Lincoln was elected, to 1980, the modern era, when Ronald Reagan was elected. And using the methods of pattern recognition to see what patterns are associated with stability and earthquake, we came up with our 13 key indicators, the 13 keys to the White House, and our simple decision rule. If six or more of the keys go against the party holding the White House, they are predicted losers. Any six. It's a nonlinear system. I then first used the keys, if you want to hear about that next, in 1982 to make my first advance prediction.
And you made that 2 years before the election. I mean, it wasn't like you made the prediction 3 months prior to the election. In 82,
not
you
at
made
all.
Your prediction. Nobody was expecting that.
Nobody. It was in April of 1982, almost three
right.
years
right.
before the election, you know, 2.5 years before the election. And I predicted the reelection of Ronald Reagan. Now, mind you, I am a Democrat, and I'm very clear that my predictions are predictions, not endorsements.
You've always been a Democrat. This is not like you changed parties. You've always been a Democrat.
I've always been a Democrat.
Okay,
you know, I went to Brandeis University in the 1960s, hotbed of radicalism. And I was a Bobby Kennedy Democrat then, which put me on the way on the right wing back in the 60s. I'm still a Bobby Kennedy Democrat, which I guess puts me now on the left. It's very strange what happens. At any rate, so I predicted Ronald Reagan's reelection in the midst of what was then the worst recession since the Great Depression. Everyone was talking about a one-term president. And it caught someone's attention. I get a call in my office in 1982 from a gentleman with a heavy Southern accent, and he says, Professor Lichtman, this is Lee Atwater calling, political director of the Ronald Reagan White House. We want you to come to the White House. And I said, well, maybe you got the wrong guy. You know, I kind of like George McGovern. He said, no, we know who you are. So I go to the White House. And Lee Atwater is a brilliant guy, dirty trickster, who actually died very young and recanted all his dirty tricks. And he wanted to know about Kennedy versus Nixon and other elections. But at the end of the day, he looked me in the eye and asked me the question, which was really why he brought me there. He said, Professor Lichtman, what would happen if Ronald Reagan didn't run again in 1984? A reasonable question for a man in his 70s. And I'm thinking, oh, the damage? No, I'll give it to you straight. Remember, six keys and you're out. Right now, I predicted a Reagan win with only three keys against him. But look what happens if he doesn't run again. You lose the incumbency key. You lose the internal party contest key because Bush and Robertson and Kemp will fight like crazy. And without the Gipper, you lose the incumbent charisma key.
Yeah.
You know, George Bush, charismatic. He's about as charismatic as a shopping center on a Sunday morning in Passaic, New Jersey, you know. So you go from a sure win to a sure loss. Lee Atwater looks me in the eye, sighs a big relief, and says, "Thank you so much, Professor Lichtman, and the rest is history." That was how I first got into the prediction business.
Yeah, and I see this. You started off with Reagan, then you went Bush, Clinton, Clinton, Bush, Bush, Obama, Obama, Trump, Biden. And I think at one point you had the only thing that was a little bit off was the Al Gore one, right?
2000, exactly. You know, what was the right prediction in 2000? There wasn't one. I predicted Gore would win the popular vote. He then loses Florida by 537 votes. It was a stolen election, as I proved in my 2001 report to the distinguished United States Commission on Civil Rights. It's still on their website. And as other scholars have proven, Bush only won that election because of the discarding and suppression of tens of thousands of African-American votes who are 95% Democratic. Gore should have won even the Electoral College going away. So I think I came about as close as you can get. You know, if I predicted Bush, people would be bashing me for saying, "Oh, you predicted Bush, but he only won because he stole the election." You know, an impossible election to call.
Makes sense. Now here's a question for you. This is just off topic. When you went back with Vladimir and you ran this from 1860 to 1980, how bad did Reagan beat Carter on his first term? Because I know it was 49 out of 50 states. When you ran it on the 13th, do you remember what it was when it was him against Carter?
Yes, it was, I think, 8 or 9 keys out against Carter. Remember, Carter was the incumbent, and
sure,
the polls were inconclusive.
Sure.
The polls weren't telling you what was going to happen,
yeah,
and Reagan wound up winning by 10 points. It wasn't quite the blowout in 1984, but it was a pretty bad blowout. No one since 1984 has won by 10 points, and he also overwhelmingly won the Electoral College.
Yeah, 1984 was the one where, you know, he wasn't really going out there and campaigning, and everybody was kind of like, he's going to win it no matter what. And then last minute, his people are telling him, "Listen, you better get out there and campaign, or else you could lose this one." And then he got to work. But it's interesting seeing how it was. By the way, out of all the indicators you guys went through, you and Vladimir, was there anything that was swept? Did anybody get swept 13-4-13 or no?
Once.
Who?
And that was retrospective. Teddy Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, in 1904, he was the incumbent. He had become president when William McKinley was killed, assassinated, and he had a perfect score, no keys out against him. And he was running against the most obscure presidential candidate in history, someone no one has ever heard of, Alton B. Parker, who was a New York State judge who was never heard from again. All kinds of stories here. It's not just,
that's,
you know,
I mean, I'm just
predict something and that's it.
Exactly. I wonder if there was a sweep, and I figured Reagan first time against Carter would probably be a good one as well. So let's talk about the 13. When you guys came up with the 13, did you originally, was it kind of like I visualize you sitting in a boardroom, you and Vladimir, you're talking and you got 30 of them, and you say, "Not this one, not this one, not this one." Did you guys go from 30 to 13, or was it no, 13 is what you came up with?
No, you got it right. I don't remember exactly how many, but it was somewhere like 30, 25. The computer, you know, we're doing pattern recognition. Most models are so-called, I don't know how much you want me to get into the weeds on this, multiple regression models, big equations with parameters. We didn't do it that way. We just looked at patterns. And the computer came up with the number of keys and the decision rule that best separated stability incumbent wins from earthquakes. So we winnowed it down to 13. And you know what we did? We published it like two academics in an academic journal, the world's leading scientific journal of all things, the Journal of the United States National Academy of Sciences. And you expect, oh, at least 4 or 5 people to read your journal article when you're an academic. But 6 people read it. And the 6th person was the science reporter for the Associated Press. And I opened my newspaper. I'm back at American University, young college professor. And there is this article, "Odd Couple Discovers Keys to the White House." And it was only that article that motivated me to get out into the wider world outside of academia and become a predictor.
You know what I'm curious about? I'm curious about out of the other, you know, 12 or 17 that didn't make it, how many of them had to do with facts, how many of them had to do with the candidate. Because, you know, out of your 13, two is only about candidates. The other 11 is just, you can pretty much measure it. And the last two is about candidates.
Yeah, for example, we had some keys relating to candidate ideology and candidate fundraising. Turns out ideology, fundraising issues are absolutely non-predictive. Wow. If you had used that in 2016, you would have predicted a Hillary Clinton landslide, because on conventional candidate measures, she's way ahead of Donald Trump.
Did looks or voice have anything to do with it? The only reason I asked the question about looks or voice is because you remember the first time when Kennedy and Nixon got on the debate?
Yeah.
And it was on TV, and Nixon hadn't shaved. He had the 4 o'clock shave. And, you know, Kennedy went to the tanning salon the day before. He looked really good and looked better on camera than he did on radio. Was voice or looks, did that have anything to do with it or no?
Absolutely not. Nothing to do with it. You know, was Richard Nixon better looking than George McGovern or, you know, Hubert Humphrey? Richard Nixon was not exactly your great-looking, you know, great-sounding candidate, but he won election twice.
I only say that because Kennedy was a, you know, if you ask the ladies and you do a poll on the ladies with Kennedy, he'd be 100% handsome-looking guy right there.
Well, something does come into play there, and we can talk about it when we get to the keys, to the two candidate keys, and Kennedy is one of my models for that.
Okay, so why don't we go through the 13? Do you want to take the lead or you want me to read them off?
You read them off. It's probably easier to go
them,
back.
I got them right
forth.
Here for me. So I'll go through all of them here, what you have. So these are the 13 different indicators that you have. Party mandate.
Before we get to that, remember, six and you're out.
Six and you're out.
Six and Trump is out. Right.
Sure. So let's just go through it together, and you can tell me who's out. So party mandate, which side do you choose with that?
Remember, all I need to do is say true or false.
Okay.
Because it's always based on the incumbent party. So if it's false, it's one key against them. And that one is obviously false because the Republicans took a huge beating in the midterm elections, which is that's what it's measured on. So one false.
So one false. So that favors, just so the viewers watching is, that favors the Dems.
Right. Or goes against Trump. Exactly.
Sure.
Either way.
Contest. Second one, no primary contest.
No, Trump wasn't opposed. That one's true.
Okay, got it. Three, incumbency.
He's a sitting president. That one's true.
No question. Third party.
You know, forget about Kanye West. Didn't even make it to the ballot. That one is true. So the first four, which I call the political keys, only one false.
Only one false, which is the House. He lost the House, and they got a lot of work to do to win the House. Okay.
Yes.
So short-term economy.
Well, that's based on whether there's an election year recession. That was looking good until we got the pandemic recession. That one is false.
Okay. Six, long-term economy.
That was also looking good until we got this relentlessly negative growth this year that drove the average down so far. So that's the third false.
Seven is policy change.
Absolutely. You know, he came in intent on undoing everything Obama had done, and he's mostly done it by executive orders, but certainly the policies now are very different. That one's true.
Social unrest.
That was also looking good until the death of George Floyd and the social unrest raging across the land. So that one is false. So we're now at four falses.
Scandal, number nine.
My favorite key, the scandal key. And we can talk about it, but as you know, because I wrote the book, Case for Impeachment, at the same time I predicted Donald Trump would win, I also predicted he would be impeached.
Mm-hmm.
And he was. He's only the third American president ever to be impeached by the full House. Richard Nixon resigned before that happened. So that one is false. That's five down.
Okay, got it. 10, foreign military failure.
Well, you can argue there have been failures on Bush's watch, but again, these judgments here have to be objective and nonpartisan, and they have to be based on how I called the keys since 1860. And we're talking about big splashy failures like 9/11 or losing a war. Nothing of that magnitude, so I count that one as true.
So that one is true. Okay, so that favors more on Trump. So foreign military success.
Yeah, you know, I've looked around. He got nowhere in North Korea except to pump up Kim Jong-un. gave up Syria to the Russians. Nothing accomplished there. Nothing accomplished in Iran or in Venezuela. Now, recently, we did have this UAE treaty
Israel.
With the Israelis, but it's a bogus treaty because it just says suspend annexations, and Netanyahu said he can unsuspend at any time. And the whole, you know, God knows how many hours of the Republican convention, you've probably watched it too. One line on the UAE treaty, one line in Trump's speech. That's it. So I don't count that. So that one is false.
So that one is false in your eyes.
We're now six.
Yes. So now it's incumbent charisma.
This is the one I get the most flack about. But again, it's not someone's opinion. It's how it fits my model. And this is a very high threshold key, Patrick, very high. We're talking about the once in a generation inspirational candidate, like on the Republican side, Theodore Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan, who brought in all those Reagan Democrats. And to win this key, you have to be broadly appealing. Trump's a great showman, but as we know, he appeals to a narrow base, about 40 to 43%. And the strong approval is 25 to 30%. More than 60% of the American people don't trust him and don't like him. So that one I count as false. That's seven.
So then that's all he needs. So, and then the last one
needs.
Is challenger's charisma, which is Biden.
So if Biden was charismatic, that would count against Trump, but he's not. You know, he's an experienced guy, decent guy, just as Trump is no Ronald Reagan, Joe Biden is no John F. Kennedy.
Okay.
So that one is true, but we have seven.
So based on your prediction, you predict who will be president come election day?
Yes, based on my prediction, with seven keys down and only six to count out the party holding the White House, I predict Donald Trump will lose, and therefore Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States. A reversal of my prediction for Donald Trump in 2016. But remember, he was the challenger then. So
yes.
He didn't have to defend a record. Now he's the incumbent. He still doesn't understand that he's going to be judged on his record, not on what he says.
To be fair, with viewers watching this, somebody may say, well, he hates Trump. That's why he would go against Trump. You said Trump would win in 2016 when people thought you were crazy for choosing Trump.
People thought I was nuts. And again, I teach in Washington, D.C.
It's
the Democrat. The Democratic stronghold of the world.
Yes.
And I was extremely unpopular. I took huge heat for it. But I did get a note, and it said, Professor, congrats, good call, and in big Sharpie letters, Donald J. Trump. You want to see it?
You got it. Let me see it.
I got it.
That's hilarious.
Let me know if it's in the picture.
I totally see it.
There it is.
Good for him. So that means you have a good collection, because if your predictions are right, you're about to get a Biden autograph here soon.
He better.
He better.
He's going to have to answer to me.
So, and by the way, you're obviously a Democrat, PhD Harvard, Harvard leans left. You're 1993 Scholar Professor of the Year at American University. So it's not like you're in that world. So to go against in 2016 against Hillary, you probably were, you know, many of the people that were having lunch with you on a weekly basis probably said, you know what, I don't know if I want to have lunch with you this week when you chose Trump.
Exactly. Let me tell you something. The hardest thing about being a forecaster, it's not knowing history, although you got no history. It's not knowing politics, or you got no politics. It's not knowing math, although you got no math. It's putting aside your own political preferences. If I just made forecasts according to my political preferences, I'd be useless as a forecaster. And my training as an historian, which teaches us to look at the past in an impartial way, was critical to my being a successful and, as you say, totally impartial forecaster.
Now, can I challenge you on a couple of your 13, if that's okay
with
you?
Of course.
Okay, let's have some fun here. Okay.
Absolutely.
So on the short-term economy, how far back do you go on the short-term economy? Because if you look at the economy starting November 9th, Trump gets elected, Dow goes up 250 that day, Dow ends at 18,589. Today, the Dow is at 29,081. We're talking about a very substantial growth in the last 4 years, right? So short-term economy could be a true, couldn't it?
No. I mean, you can have that opinion, but again, you've got to do it according to the definitions of the keys. And one of the great things about the keys, unlike most prediction systems, which are these big impenetrable equations, they're a great teaching tool and they're a great tool for discussion, right? But you got to, here's exactly what the keys says. The economy is not in recession during the election campaign. And we absolutely have a recession now during the election campaign. The National Bureau of Economic Research declared a recession, said it began in February, it hasn't ended, and we've had two consecutive negative quarters. So whatever else you may say, and you have a right to say it, you got to stick to the definition.
I'm just trying to help you get a 10-game win streak. I mean, this is like a double-digit win streak, because the one thing when you look at recessions, you know, there are certain things that you control. There are certain things that you don't control with a pandemic. That is the one part where I don't know, even if your model may need to have like a disclaimer saying this model doesn't pertain to years with a pandemic, because none of the years you've gone, there's been a pandemic. So there may be a good out for you, so you can be 10 for 10, because double-digit winning streak in baseball, basketball, NHL is a big deal.
It's a very big deal. And, you know, every 4 years, someone comes to me and says, your model's not going to work this year because we have an African-American running. We've never had that before. Or we have a woman running. We've never had that before. Your model's not going to work. And here's my answer. If you remember retrospectively, the model goes all the way back to 1860.
Yeah.
Women didn't vote. My ancestors from Eastern Europe weren't even here yet. Neither were your ancestors even here yet, right? We had an agricultural economy. We had no polls, no radio, no automobiles. And so it's what we call a very robust model that's lasted through enormous change. The Civil War, the Great Depression, World War II, and of course, the aftermath of an even worse pandemic right after World War I.
The only reason I say this is the following. So I've been in the financial industry 20 years. I got out of the Army. I went to Morgan Stanley Deanwood day before 9/11. So I remember when the market tanked right after 9/11. The way people handled their finances was very weird and different. Nobody wanted to sit down and talk to you about stocks, mutual funds, money under management. They were a little bit more hesitant. In 08, when the market tanked, you remember 08, when the market tanked 38% in a year, 401ks became 201ks, and, you know, short sales, you know, places like Riverside had 65% turnover with their property. Just a very scary time. Even though there was quantitative easing and bailout, American people didn't get $600 a week every week. So I felt it as an advisor when I was dealing with clients. They were struggling financially. But during this pandemic, I got to tell you, Alan, when you're dealing with customers and you're talking to them, even though 55 million people may be unemployed, it doesn't give the feeling. I'm a day-to-day person, so I'm dealing with people regularly. It doesn't give the same feeling of recession as an 08 or even slightly in an 01. It's very different language out there, because people are financially not doing as bad as they did in 08 or 01. What do you think about that?
Well, again, I don't look behind the keys. As Herbert Hoover, a man who should know, certainly said, presidents get the credit for the sunshine and the blame for the rain. You know, he didn't cause the Great Depression, and yet it caused the crash of his presidency and the crash of his Republican Party. But I would say further that while you may say the pandemic, you know, is an act of God, it was Donald Trump's botched response to the pandemic that has put us into the economic difficulties that we see today. I know he takes no responsibility for that, but as Herbert Hoover said, when you're the president, you cannot escape responsibility. Moreover, I would say the economic, again, just to answer your argument, the key is the key. This is much worse than most previous recessions, much worse than the George H.W. Bush recession of 1991-92, much worse than the 1960 recession that Richard Nixon had to face. You know, it may not be as bad as the Great Recession of 2008-2009, but you know what? My good friend, you may have heard of him, the late, great Jack Germond, the journalist, the fat man in the middle, had this to say. He said, there's an economist at every street corner in Washington, D.C., and not one agrees with any other. So I stick to the objective model.
I respect that. I respect that. I just wonder. I wonder if there isn't, because let me tell you, when I read your 13 markers that you guys have, the indicators, it's brilliant when you think about it. But I think there is an element of opinion there. There's a little bit of room for opinion because, you know, even right now when you said, you know, you may say the pandemic was, not something that we could have prevented. It kind of happened, even though we shut down China, et cetera, et cetera. Still, Herbert Hoover says if it happens during your term, it happens during your term. And Trump didn't take responsibility for anything. Say you're right about all of that. There's a part of it that's opinion. I wonder if there's an out there for these 13 indicators. The other one is charismatic. You know, when you think about
Let me comment on that,
please.
Because you make a great point there. And when I first came out with the keys, I was slammed for that very thing. The professional forecasters, the political scientists, and by the way, you know as well as I, political science is not hard science. But the political scientists, the forecasters were saying, come on, Lichtman, you've committed the great sin, the sin of subjectivity. You've got some judgment in your keys. And my answer is, I'm an historian. I know that you cannot reduce the human world to pure numbers. It doesn't work. Even the big, you know better than I, even the big econometric models, the Wharton School, they don't work very well to predict the economy. There has to be an element of judgment. It took about 10 to 15 years. And then the political forecasting world realized that the most successful models are like the keys, which combine purely numerical measures like midterm election results with measures with some judgment, not random judgment, because you got to go with how it's defined in the model. And the keys became the hottest thing in forecasting. I twice keynoted the International Forecasting Summit. I published in all the big forecasting journals. You know, I was interviewed by great people like you all over the world. So yes, you know, there is an element of judgment, but I don't think that invalidates the system. I think it makes it stronger.
Well, I mean, that's the part. That's what makes it impressive. But that's what also, if you get this one right, let me tell you, this one's going to be very impressive for you to hit double digit.
Really?
It'll be very impressive because when I look, the only factor for me is two factors. One is that one, and even military success, you gave it false, which on the military success, one could argue the UAE and Israel. One could argue Soleimani, because Soleimani was, I'm from Iran myself. So being somebody that's from Iran, and I was in the U.S. Army and, you know, follow military based on what's going on and all the proxy wars that was going on. Soleimani was the leader behind a lot of these proxy wars taking place. So one could say Soleimani was a military success, similar to when Obama had, you know, Osama bin Laden. That was a military success. So that one could also be a little bit debated. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, here's the difference. There are two things when you read the book and when everyone buys my book, Predicting the Next President, The Keys to the White House 2020. Number one, it has to be big enough to be consistent with the way the key was called. This is a high threshold key. Number two, it has to be of great substantive significance. And, you know, there are lots of, I'm not a Middle East expert. There are lots of Middle East experts who said that killing made things less safe, less stable in the Persian Gulf. I don't know if that's true, but there's a lot of division, unlike other big foreign policy successes. And then it has to be broadly recognized. I promise you, 90% or more of the American people could not name General Soleimani. Osama bin Laden was a household name before and after he was killed. He was public enemy number one. He was the international Al Capone. Soleimani, unknown to Americans, still unknown to Americans, and it's unclear whether anything is different in the Persian Gulf. And they hardly mentioned it in their convention. If this was a big deal, you know, it would have been featured in the convention. It was barely mentioned, only in Trump's speech.
I notice you go to convention a lot. So do you gauge a lot also what the incumbent is talking on their speech at their convention?
That's very important. What they think is important. And by the way, a little aside here, I love virtual conventions. I've been to conventions, and you know why people go to conventions? To party, because The conventions don't do anything. The nominee is already selected. So think of the carbon footprint we've saved. Think of the money we've saved by having virtual conventions. Plus, previously in the in-person conventions, no one could hear the preliminary speeches because delegates are milling around the floor. They're talking. No one pays attention until you get the president, the vice president. Now, in the virtual convention, everyone comes across crystal clear.
Interesting. Very, very good point, by the way, what you're saying there. And just so you know, our viewers who own local bars near where conventions are being done, they're offended by your comments, just so you know.
I'm sure they are, and that's a good point on the other side.
You're minimizing all the after parties taking place.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's continue. Okay, so far we've done a couple. And by the way, Soleimani, in many military generals' eyes, he was the right-hand guy. I mean, he was the one that made things work, and he was feared by a lot of people because he had so many strong contacts on the other side. But fine, let's just say you're right. He is not Osama bin Laden. Again, the element of judgment is the one that I like when you say there's the element of judgment.
That's why we can discuss it. We can't discuss the Wharton model, you know.
This is why I invited you, because I really like your style on how you are and how you go back and forth, and you're very open about it. So this last one is the incumbent is not charismatic.
Okay? Right. The charisma key to neither Trump nor Biden. That's right.
I mean, so let me ask you a question. Would you consider yourself charismatic?
I have no idea.
I think you're very charismatic.
I'm not, you know.
No.
I ran for office, I did terribly.
but I say most guys, if I were to say right now without showing the face, my next guest is going to talk to us about predicting the next president. He's a historian. If I told him, judge the speaker based on him being a historian, 80% of people would be logging off because a historian is going to talk like this. Well, yes, as a doctor, I've been
You're right.
You got a personality. So you know your world. They're boring people when you listen to them.
All right. Let me tell you, though, the difference. Unlike me, we have metrics to measure Donald Trump. And we can measure those metrics against the once-in-a-generation inspirational candidates. You can't call someone broadly inspirational when over 60% of the American people don't trust him and don't like him. And he's never come close to 50% approval. And a strong approval is 25 to 30%. I've been hit by a lot of people who say, well, he's charismatic to his base. And I agree with that, but that's not the definition of the key.
Okay, so Alan, you are smarter than I am, more educated than I am, more experienced than I am, and this is your world. Okay.
Whenever anyone says that to me, I start to worry.
Okay, but here's the part: what show have you watched over and over and over again? Like, if you were to say, Pat, you know, I'm a CSI guy, or you know, I've watched. I don't know. Maybe you're a Narcos guy. I can't put you on a certain show that you'll watch over and over again. What is a show that you'll watch over and over and over again for years? Like, are you Friends? I don't know. What was the show that you watched over and over again?
New York Yankees baseball.
New York Yankees.
Being a native New Yorker, yes.
Well, I respect that because I am trying to get my hands on a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle PSA 10, and only three people own it, and the two don't want to sell them. One of them does. But he's asking for a lot of money. I'm a Yankees guy as well. But here's my point to you. My point to you is this. Do you think somebody who lacks charisma could have a show on TV that lasts 15 seasons, Alan? You got to have charisma for advertisers to say, we like advertising during the show ran by this guy who keeps telling people, you're fired. What do you think about that?
Hey. You know, I never watched the show, I have to tell you once, so I'm the wrong person. But we're not judging him on his TV show.
We're
judging him on his performance as a candidate and president. And when over 60% turn thumbs down, and when he has one of the narrowest bases in the history of the presidency, he doesn't fit my definition. He may fit some other definition, and that's fine. But if you're going to call the keys, you've got to call them within the context of my definitions. You can have a different opinion, and that's fine, but that's not the keys.
So I've gone through your keys, and based on your keys, the score I have is 9-4 Trump, okay? The keys I have. Now, listen.
Your track record of predicting elections? Come on. I'm not intruding in your realm.
Well, listen. Here's what I'm willing to do. If you get it right, I'll get you the best seats on Yankees. You tell me which ticket you want seats, and I'll get you the sickest seats wherever you want for four people. Take your family. If I win, you come back and you say, Pat, you were right. Is that a fair deal?
Deal. You know, I got to tell you something, right, Pat. I'm 73, right?
Yes.
I've been doing this since almost before you were born, right? Since 1982. And it's every 4 years I get butterflies in my stomach. It's hell of a thing to put yourself on the line.
I bet. I got a lot of respect.
Every 4 years.
I bet.
And everyone is just waiting for you to be wrong so they can pounce on you, right? You know, I've been right 9 times, but all anyone will look at would be if I'm wrong this time. And I got to tell you two other things. Two things outside the realm of the keys that keep me up at night. One is voter suppression. We saw that in Florida in 2000. That's why that election got screwed up. Now it's nationwide. And here's the thing. The Republican base is old white guys like me. You can't manufacture more old white guys. Can't make us live, unfortunately, to be 150. But what you can do is restrict the voting of the Democratic rising base of minorities and young people. And Trump has been fiercely trying to do that. And his guy at the post office has messed up the post office, which is going to make it very difficult to get mail-in ballots, an essential thing during the pandemic, in on time. Second thing is Russian intervention. We know they're here. They're setting up already all of these trolls on behalf of Donald Trump. They're probably better at it this time because they've had all that experience. And we know Trump will welcome it and exploit it, just like he did in 2016. And by the way, don't read the Mueller report. The Mueller report is, to me, the biggest embarrassment and disappointment in modern history. Read the bipartisan report of the Republican-controlled Senate Intelligence Committee. It goes way beyond the disappointing Mueller report to prove collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians.
That's a fair assessment because, you know, when it comes down to the meddling part, I think it's fair to say that, you know, we have been meddling. America has been meddling with other people's elections for God knows more than any other country has ever meddled into our elections. You know this. We're famous for meddling in other people's elections. I mean, even I had a guest on a month and a half ago, John Perkins. He wrote a book called Economic Hitman, which you probably know, John Perkins, if you don't. His business model is how to meddle in other people's elections who have resources, countries with resources. So I think this meddling stuff is going to keep going on, and people are just getting very good at hacking. But, you know, to go back and see who you picked, you picked Reagan, okay? And very impressive to pick Reagan in 81, 82, 2 years before. Unbelievably impressive. Okay, Bush 88, okay, fine, Bush 88 makes sense. There was an embarrassing moment for his opponent.
Wait, let me stop you. I picked Bush 88 in May of 1988, long before the Willie Horton ad, the tank,
Long before the tank.
Long before.
Okay,
May of 1988.
Impressive. So let me ask you that.
Let me finish. Bush was 17 points behind Michael Dukakis, I wrote, he's a shoo-in to win. And again, people thought I was crazy.
Wow. Okay, let's go through every one of them. I'm actually curious now. When did you choose 92 Clinton against Bush? Was it before the debate that the lady asked, hey, President Bush, how do you feel about the national debt? And he says, what, you don't think I'm affected by it? You know which one I'm talking about. Did you choose before that?
Yes, but I chose that 92 and 2016 were my latest calls. And the reason, they were both six key elections. And in 92, you may remember this crazy guy, Ross Perot. He's in. He's out. He's in. He's out. And it was very – and that was the sixth key, the third-party key decided the election. And so it was very difficult for me to make that call until finally we knew
sense.
Ross Perot really was in. Tough call.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for clarifying that. So then you have 2000 Bush. Which, 2000.
Crazy. We already went through that crazy situation.
Yeah, and then 04, and then Obama and when you did Obama against Hillary, and you did Obama, I'm sorry, Obama against
McCain,
and he did Obama against Romney. What was the score when you did it? I'm so curious, out of the 13.
Yeah, these were overwhelming scores. I called 2008 in early 2006. Again, almost 3 years ahead of time, because I saw how many of the keys were going to fall in a very difficult second Bush term. In fact, I became infamous for saying this early, that the Democrats could pick a name out of the phone book and elect that person president. And that's kind of what they did, right? Whoever heard of Barack Obama, you know,
one-term
back then.
Senator, yep.
Yeah.
One-term and, senator. What was
he wasn't even a senator yet then, I don't think. I think he was elected in 2006. So he wasn't even a senator when I called it. And then I called 2012, which is a very hard to call election, in January of 2010, because, again, I could early see the keys lining up. And I got blistering attacks from none other than, you may have heard of this guy, Nate Silver, right? 1911, out of the blue, gratuitously, he writes a 20-page attack on my prediction, saying, you can't predict this early, this is ridiculous, can't do it. I wrote a big response, it was great. And of course, I was ultimately right. And then much later, based on the polls, he comes along. So I write him an email, and I said, Nate, let's do a joint article showing how two different analysts using utterly different methods came to the same answer. Never heard from him again.
Never heard of him. Wow.
Never. He never answered my email.
And, by the way, you said 1911. I'm assuming he wrote it in 2011.
2011,
okay,
yeah.
Got it.
So even I wasn't around in 1911.
No, exactly. That's what I figured you'd try to see.
Good catch.
Yes.
I'm a little dyslexic in my old age.
It's all good. I have other issues, but, you know, it's totally fine. So now here's the other thing to be thinking about. You know, in October, everybody's got something up their sleeves. Well, I'm going to pull this card. Oh, we have this recorded tape of Trump with this woman, or we have this, you know, four people that are going to come out against Biden, or we have some new stuff that's going to come out from Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell, or we have some stuff that's going to come out from the RNC or the DNC. You're saying anything that comes out is irrelevant.
Exactly. Keep your eye on the big picture and don't worry about this day-to-day stuff. Look, these media pundits, they're all friends of mine, and they're terrific. They're smart, but they have a handicap that I don't have. They have to cover the election every single day. So they got to make a big deal out of all of these, you know, day-to-day events. They just can't say, Lichtman predicts Biden, see you in 3 months.
They wouldn't sell a lot of ads like that. So
exactly.
Based on your model, though, if there is no third party, debates are irrelevant.
Yeah, debates are irrelevant. Let me tell you something, too, about this, you know, the media and the candidates. You may know that in 1961, the great Republican president, Dwight Eisenhower, gave the most famous farewell address ever, where he warned about the country being in the grip of the military-industrial complex. This is from The War Hero. And the military-industrial complex is based on what we call the Iron Triangle. The defense contractors who make money, the members of Congress who want industries in their districts, and the military that wants all this hardware. Well, we now have a political industrial complex with its own Iron Triangle. There are the pollsters, the consultants, the ad men who make huge amounts of money on this notion that the election is decided by all these day-to-day events. Then there's the media that makes huge money covering the election day by day. And then there are the candidates who are afraid to go against the media and the consultants. And I've been screaming for 4 years to try to break this Iron Triangle, but like the one on the military-industrial complex, it's very hard to break.
Yeah, so again, to go back to it, debate's irrelevant. So no matter what can be said, so no one-liner that comes back and nowadays a video goes viral, gets 150 million views, irrelevant in your eyes.
Hillary Clinton won all the debates by all the polls, won them handily, made no difference in the election. John Kerry in 2004 won the debates, made absolutely no difference.
Interesting. That's and by the way, how about this other one here? I'm just trying to pull right now to see if you're going to say anything. But I'm very, You're April 4th. My dad's April 10th. You're not cracking. I mean, you're like you're staying strong. You know, you're not saying anything that there's any possibilities. How about this one here? So this whole thing with COVID, you know, CDC comes out 2 days ago saying 96% of the causes of the 150,000 people that died, the number one reason wasn't COVID. It was something else. Only 6% cause was COVID. What do you think about that data that comes out? Is that any leverage that gives Trump or no?
I'll get to that in 1 second, but let me follow up on your comment about my not crack. You may not know this, but another thing I do is I've been an expert witness in 100 civil rights cases, big cases in Texas and Florida, North Carolina, California, Wisconsin. I have been cross-examined for 8 hours, you know, by some of the best wow. lawyers in the world who want to take my head off. So, you know, I'm used to taking the heat. And again, the secret of the keys is nothing matters unless it turns a key. If that opens up the economy and all of a sudden, you know, we have an economic miracle, you know, where we have 60% growth that wipes out the negative growth of the first two quarters, that will change a key. But unless it changes a key, I can't go outside my system. Because if I go outside my system, I've counterfeited my own system. I cannot do that. But let me just comment as an expert in history and politics, leaving aside my system. And I wrote about this in the case for impeachment. The most important thing you have as president is your credibility. Well, Trump has lost all credibility on COVID, you know, promoting quack cures like swallowing bleach and putting ultraviolet light into your body, saying 99% of cases are harmless, kids are immune. He no longer has any credibility. So anything coming out of this White House on COVID, the great majority of the American people aren't going to believe it because there is no credibility.
Okay. All right. I mean, that's all I got for you. You did great, just so you know that. Now, my only questions I got for you have nothing to do with this. I'm just curious to know what you can say about this since you've been around the block. So 1970, American people, this is a poll that came out. I know you love polls. This is a poll that came out. This is a poll that came out that said in 1970, during the Walter Cronkite era, 80% of the American people trusted the media. That same poll that came out said 20% of people trust the media today. You've been around. What's changed in the last 50 years?
Yeah, a couple of things have changed. The more important thing is people's views of their government. You know, we talk about the Kennedy era, you know, as this shining moment like Camelot under King Arthur. And obviously that's a myth. But one thing that is true, it used to be 70, 75, 80% of the American people thought that their government most of the time. Now we're down to 20% of the American people believing that. So both the media and the government have collapsed in terms of public trust. And this is a huge crisis for our democracy because if people can't believe in reliable sources of information, and people can't believe in long-established institutions, then our democracy is in a lot of trouble. And you know, because you've had experience abroad, democracies are fragile. You know, we tend to believe, oh, American democracy can never collapse. But you know as well as I, in the great era, first great golden age of democracy, after World War I, there were dozens of democracies. By the mid-1940s, we were down to 12. So, and according to Freedom House, in the last 10 or 15 years, 25 democracies. They haven't become complete autocracies, but they have greatly declined in their democratic strength.
So is that something? So if you're saying right now that when it comes down to the democracy, you know, with 20%, we don't trust the media, nor do we trust the government.
I'm not sure it's 20%. I think it's higher than that. I think it's more.
Sure.
Like 40%.
But let's just say we don't. I mean, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And if it's a bad thing, who do we trust? Who do the American people lean on trusting to give the right source?
Well, you know, what's happened, unfortunately, is people tend to trust the media that echoes their own views. Those who watch Fox News are fundamentally different than those who watch MSNBC. And while these are all long-term trends, all these trends have been greatly exacerbated by Donald Trump. You know, Richard Nixon famously said, the media is the enemy of the people, right? But he said it in private. People don't realize he never said that in public. Trump has said that dozens of times in public and has tweeted attacks on the media over 1,500 times since he took office. And we know the ways in which he has been divisive racially, gender, religion. So we've had a president who loves chaos and loves division, and that's been a huge problem.
It's very impressive on how much you love President Trump. It's felt. It's just it oozes out of you. You know, you just kind of feel it. So
I'd love to have a president I could trust.
When's the last time you had that?
I trusted Obama. I have a lot of criticisms of Obama. I'm not just fawning on Obama, but one thing for the most part, he could be trusted.
Cool. Let's do a quick speed run. I'll give you a name. Tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay, so Al Gore.
Al Gore, boring.
Nixon.
Crook.
Roger Stone.
Crook.
Joe Biden.
Decent but boring.
Clinton. Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton. Brilliant but flawed.
Hillary.
Too uptight.
Obama.
Brilliant, but never understood the political role of the president.
Interesting. Trump.
Dishonest, divisive.
Cuomo.
Which?
Andrew Cuomo.
Mixed, kind of coming into his own, but made mistakes too.
Vladimir Kelis Borak.
Brilliant, great guy. May he rest in peace.
Absolutely. Tucker Carlson.
Inflammatory. Dishonest.
AOC.
Inflammatory. Maybe the future.
Bernie Sanders.
Inflammatory. No longer the future.
Anderson Cooper.
Solid.
Solid. Okay. We'll finish on solid. I think it's good to finish on a good note. You know, we'll say Anderson Cooper solid.
He'll and you can see, I was brutally honest with you. I wasn't whitewashing every Democrat.
But I tell you what, that's what I appreciate about you, because when I saw how you were, I even saw what you said on Bill Maher. You said something about Republicans have no principles, but they have spine. Democrats are with principles, but without any spine, you know, with no spine. I mean, you've made some very direct call-outs to Republicans. You don't hold back, but at the same time, you'll say 2016 Trump wins. So the audience needs to know how much you're against Republicans, but you're still willing to go based on your 13 indicators and say who's going to win and who's going to lose.
That's correct. It is critically important if you're going to deal with political forecasting, as hard as it is to put aside your own political views. Otherwise, why bother? You're useless as a forecaster. You'll be wrong half the time. But I got to tell you, since I've been even-handed in my predictions, every 4 years, I make half the country really, really mad at me. And since I've been doing this for 40 years, the whole country is really, really mad at me. That's why everyone is waiting to pounce on me if I'm wrong.
It's very hard to not like you. I don't have to agree with you, but it's very hard not to like you.
Well, I like you too.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed this time with you. So I guess on November 4th, unless if Goldman Sachs is right, because Goldman Sachs is saying this thing's going to take 35 days and they're going to do the recount kind of like it was with Gore and they did 32 days. So I don't know what, if they're not right, either I owe you on November 4th 4 tickets to Yankees game. You tell me which game, or you're going to come back as a guest and we'll have a friendly conversation together.
Take care, my friend.
Take care. You as well. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. So now that you know the 13 indicators, I'm curious, who do you think is going to win the election? Comment below. Biden or Trump? I want to know, because his score of 7-6, there's a part of it that's judgment, but I wonder what you think about it. And by the way, if you want to get his book, we're going to put a link to his book below. They can go purchase. Again, follow him on Twitter. Send him a message as well. And if you enjoyed this interview today, I have another interview I want you to watch with Roger Stone, who's on the complete opposite side of Lichtman. You get a chance to kind of decide for yourself on how these two different powerhouses, one's a guy predicts presidents, the other one's a good marketer that knows how to make presidents. If you haven't seen the interview with Roger Stone, I think you'll enjoy it. And if you've not subscribed to the channel, please do so. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
America, here's the deal. There are people who actually use their brains, who take the time to actually do research. The Commons of the world, the John Legends of the world, the Kerry Washingtons of the world. You see what Snoop is out there doing. Shaq has now talked about voting for the first time. He did an event the other day for the Biden campaign. And here's my deal. Here's my deal. Lil Wayne, if you want to endorse Donald Trump, go ahead. But don't sit here and think we stupid, Erica, by saying that the Platinum Plan is going to help black people. How in the hell is something one page? One page.
You know, because
the first sheet ain't nothing but a cover sheet. Okay?
Yeah.
And I said it. Lil Wayne, don't go on ESPN. Don't go on Fox Sports. Bring your ass here and talk to black people, and let's go over line by line. See, here's my challenge to you, Lil Wayne. Since you sat down with Donald Trump, bring your ass here with no codeine, no purple drink, and I'm going to go line by line. We're going to start with the top line. We're going to start with the top line, Lil Wayne, and we're going to go line by line. And I want you to explain to black people how Trump's so-called platinum plan is going to help black people. Line by line, Lil Wayne. Now, I advise you to read that damn thing first. Because what you don't want to do, Erica, you don't want to come over here with a long-ass pause when I hit you with a question.
It's time to be smart. When we control our institutions, we win. This is the most important news show on television of any racial background. Y'all put $2, $3, $4, $5, $10, $15, $20, $30 on this and keep this going. What you've done, Roland, since this crisis came out in full bloom, anybody watching this, tell your friends, go back and look at the last 2 weeks, especially of Roland Martin Unfiltered. I mean, hell, go back and look at the last 2 days. You've had sitting United States senators today, Klobuchar and Harris. Whatever you have that you have, you can bring to Roland Martin Unfiltered to support it, please do, because this information may literally save your life.
Watch Roland Martin Unfiltered daily at 6 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Facebook, or Periscope, or go to RolandMartinUnfiltered.com.
Support the Roland Martin Unfiltered Daily Digital Show by going to RolandMartinUnfiltered.com. Our goal is to get 20,000 of our fans contributing $50 each for the whole year. You can make this possible. RolandMartinUnfiltered.com.
For decades, Democrat politicians like Joe Biden have taken black voters for granted. They made you big promises before every election, and then the moment they got to Washington, they abandoned you and they sold you out. The Democrat Party used you and they lied to you every single time. You know it better than anybody else knows it. The Democrats will always take back the vote. And I'm here today to announce a brand new plan to deliver more opportunity, more security, more fairness, and more prosperity to black communities. We call it the Platinum Plan. Platinum Plan. And that's a contract with black Americans, and it's going to be something that people talk about for a long time to come. If you vote Republican over the next 4 years, we will create 3 million new jobs for the black community. Open 500,000 new black-owned businesses. Increase access to capital in black communities by $500 billion. Build up peaceful and safer urban neighborhoods with the highest standards of, and you know this, of policing. We want the highest standards. We have to have highest standards of policing. Bring even greater fairness to the justice system. We did criminal justice reform. We remember that. Even greater, we will create a national clemency project to right wrongful prosecutions and to pardon individuals who have reformed their life.
This Platinum Plan commits $500 billion to inner city areas to create a new era of prosperity and close the wealth gap in Black communities. President Trump pitching the plan recently in Atlanta.
And I'm here today to announce a brand new plan to deliver more opportunity, more security, more fairness, and more prosperity to Black communities. We call it the Platinum Plan. Platinum Plan. And that's a contract with Black Americans, and it's going to be something that people talk about for a long time to come.
Georgia small business owner Bruce Lavelle, who also heads the President's Diversity Coalition, says he was overcome with emotion as he heard details of the plan.
I was just choked up because never in my life have I seen a president that is like, this is real stuff here. This is real meat.
California GOP congressional candidate Joe Collins, also in attendance, applauds the move.
I was really impressed. I was really surprised because I've never seen an agenda for the Black community like I've seen this president lay out before. And I look forward to this economic improvement. I'm telling you, the inner cities need it, but we also need to vote for people who want to see us do better instead of voting for our comfortability.
It comes at a time when America's wealth gap between whites and blacks remains substantial. In 2019, the typical white family had an approximate net worth of $188,200. Compare that to $24,100 for black families. Plus, about 46% of white families own their own home, compared to 17% of black families. The president promises over the next 4 years his administration will improve those numbers by creating 3 million jobs for the black community, 500,000 black-owned businesses, while increasing homeownership opportunities and providing access to better education and higher policing standards.
And this is a tremendous, tremendous boost for, as I say, the underserved communities across this great nation, you know, from California to New York to, you know, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee. This is a great, great way to spur growth in a lot of our communities. It's been, honestly, Charlene, left behind.
Touting his accomplishments, such as historically low unemployment and prison reform, the president argues that Democrats have taken African-American voters for granted.
They made you big promises before every election. And then the moment they got to Washington, they abandoned you and they sold you out. The Democrat Party used you and they lied to you every single time. You know it better than anybody else knows it.
In 2016, the president received just 8% of the black vote. And a recent Washington Post ABC News poll found black voters heavily favor Joe Biden over Trump 88-9%. Lavelle says it's time for blacks to seriously consider what Trump has to offer.
Take a look around you and ask yourself, do you like your roads? Do you like your schools? Do you like everything around you? And I think it was fair to ask, well, if the answer is no, then let's try it this way. Don't get caught up in the emotions. Pay attention to the numbers.
He admits it's a tough sell, considering the hostility and division in today's political climate.
There's only a handful of courageous, crazy people like me that actually go out on national stage and talk about it because of the fear of the cancel culture. It's very divisive and it's very aggressive towards anything that interrupts or disturbs, watch this, the quote, pay-to-play establishment.
Yet Lavelle is hopeful the election results will prove the polls wrong.
I see it in the high teens, maybe low 20s.
To further woo black voters, the president's plan also includes a proposal to make Juneteenth, the day African Americans mark the end of slavery in the U.S., a federal holiday. Charlene Aaron, CBN News.
Well, tomorrow's election day, of course, people have been voting early, but officially tomorrow's election day, so we'll give the updates as they, well, you know, we'll monitor things doing our little 2 hours segment tomorrow. It's interesting about the how well, like everybody knows, the critical mass of voting black folk, no matter what, vote Democratic. And the Platinum Plan sounds interesting. But there have been opportunities. There have been and there are opportunities for black folks in black communities. The trouble is, from my point of view, or maybe not, the trouble's not the right word, is a lot of opportunities blacks simply don't take advantage of. And if you don't solve your own problems, then that's an opportunity for someone else to come into your community and solve the problems for you. The liquor stores that are in black neighborhoods, that opportunity existed. Of course, Pastor shot that down for you, and you listened to Pastor on that. Still paid him his 10%. But liquor stores, dry cleaners, gas stations, convenience stores, mini marts, grocery stores, all dollar stores, all those opportunities were in black neighborhoods, and black folks had first crack at them. But for some reason, you once again, if you don't solve your own problems. So, the way I see it, we've had a Platinum Plan forever. But for some reason, not enough of us. Some of us take advantage of opportunities, just not enough of us. On that note, we'll see you guys tomorrow on Election Day. Have a good day.